This podcast is sponsored by Active Skin Repair, a skin health company helping people heal with natural, non-toxic, medical-grade ingredients. Active Skin Repair uses a molecule called hypochlorous acid, which mimics our natural immune response to cleanse, soothe irritation, reduce inflammation, and support healing. We've been loving Active Skin Repair for all the cuts and scrapes that show up in the active toddler life. Sage loves that there's both the spray version but also a cream version. He likes to get to choose which one he's going to do. He calls it the magic cream. And it's been so great for taking care of Mila's neck rash now that she's full on teething. Can we get a minute for a teething 3.5-month-old? What in the world? Active Skin Repair has thousands of 5-star reviews, and the ingredients so safe and clean, they can be used from the youngest member of the family to the oldest, keeping it simple with one soothing solution for all your family's skin health needs. Visit www.activeskinrepair.com to learn more about Active Skin Repair, and to get 20% off your order, use code VILLAGE. That's www.activeskinrepair.com, code VILLAGE for 20% off your order.
You know, that a father's supposed to be, and this is what I'm supposed to do. Well, then, you know, that was all based, a lot of it was fear-based for me, right? I was fearful. I felt insecure about parenting that way sometimes. I felt like it was inadequate. And again, they're resilient. They're more resilient than we are sometimes. Those are big things that just started to change the landscape for us. Let's try to figure out what's going on here so that I can help you to build your toolbox. So that's my job, build your toolbox about how you can respond differently the next time.
Hey there, I'm Alyssa Blass Campbell. I'm a mom with a master's degree in early childhood education and co-creator of the Collaborative Emotion Processing Method. I'm here to walk alongside you through the messy, vulnerable parts of being humans raising other humans with deep thoughts and actionable tips. Let's dive in together. Welcome to our new limited series, Respectful Parenting in Real Life. I get to hang out with some folks and dive into what this work looks like outside of scrolling through Instagram or that picture-perfect snapshot of respectful parenting. What does it look like when you drop the ball, when it's messy, when we're imperfect humans, or when our kids don't respond perfectly as we planned? Buckle up for some real stories from real humans, and I hope that you get to see glimpses of yourself or your kids in these stories to know that you definitely are not alone in this journey, and there's a village of folks walking right alongside you. All right, let's dive in. Hello, everybody. Today, I get to hang out with someone that I love dearly and get to call a family member, which is a privilege. Erica, who works for Seed, is married to Joel, who's joining me today. Hi, Joel.
Hi, Alyssa. How are you?
I'm doing well. So you're the dad of 3 tiny humans. How old are those kids now?
7, 5, and 3.
Bonkers.
Yeah, it is. It can get pretty wild at times.
Yeah, and just bonkers to me that they're 7, 5, and 3. My first intro into the family when I started dating Zach was your wedding. That's where I met everybody.
That's right.
And so I've been along this little journey from the outside for a while, and it's been really rad to see y'all grow as a couple and as parents and as people. And I'm excited to hear kind of like the inside and what your journey has been like. Can you share a little bit about like your background and what life looked like for you growing up?
Sure. So I grew up in Laredo, Texas, which is a border town about 2 hours south of San Antonio. And so for me, I grew up with my extended family. My mom you know, her and my bio dad separated and then got divorced. And so I was born in Austin. She went back down to Laredo. So I was with, you know, grew up with my extended family, grandparents, uncles, aunts, everybody kind of in the same complex, right? So houses were built right next to each other. And this was like Southern Laredo. And so anyway, my mom worked often and she was getting her career just starting off. And so I was raised a lot by my extended family, which was great. You know, grew up around cousins and always having family around. And that's a cultural thing too, right, for us. I mean, you know, that's big in the Hispanic culture, and it was great to have my extended family around. So grew up that way till I was about 7. And then that's when my mom met my stepfather at that time. And so at that point, then, you know, they moved in together and blended families. And so I had an older stepbrother. And then my mom and my stepdad had my half brother, who is what, 11 years younger than me. So that was about 4 years after they met. And so then just kind of we were living, you know, apart from everybody. But I then kind of just between middle school and high school kind of then grew up almost just with my immediate family. And we saw a little less and less of my extended family. But, you know, that was just as a result, I think, of life just kind of just takes you that way. Right. And so that was the way that I grew up until I graduated high school and then moved up to San Antonio to go to school. My extended family still lived in Laredo. My immediate family still lived in Laredo. My older stepbrother had moved to Houston. And so when I moved here to San Antonio, I still saw a little bit of my immediate family, but definitely less of my extended family. Like it was just kind of almost forgot what that look and sounded like to a certain extent. And so that's just kind of the way it was, right? Like life just kind of took over. So then lived in San Antonio. I mean, I've lived here since I was 18, I graduated high school, like I said, and just, yeah, I mean, so that's now 19 years. So just gave away my age there, but there you go. but you know, so yeah, just, that's just kind of been the journey for me. And it's so interesting because now that I'm now, you know, again, like you said, we've got our three kiddos and now I'm seeing more of my immediate family and even now starting to see my immediate family a little bit more because it's all kind of coming back, right? Like now our kids are growing up the same way that we did. And Erica and I had to really be intentional about that because, you know, we both grew up around a lot of family and it's been difficult sometimes kind of being, even though we're only 2 hours away and, but obviously cross country for her family. And like, we have to be intentional about seeing our family because it's so important for our kids and we see the difference that it makes in their world. So, but yeah, that's just kind of a really quick synopsis there.
Yeah. The village at work, like literally. Yeah. How has that been for you as you've navigated parenthood and looking at the ways that you were raised and what comes up for you then? And especially I think like being near family. I know for Zach and I, we were in Boston and we're doing like all this work on ourselves, yada, yada. And then we moved back closer to family and all of a sudden like triggers are coming up and things from our childhood that were like, oh yeah, we've been working on that. And all of a sudden it's like in your face again. And then same thing in parenthood. We're like, we have found ourselves in parenthood being like, oh, right, I'm opening my mouth and like my mom comes out or whatever. And like, sometimes it's like, cool, I want to repeat that part. And sometimes for me, it's like, yikes, don't want to repeat that part. And so I think it can be just like an added layer when you are parenting with that village right there and trying to do this work of sometimes rewriting patterns. What did it look like for you from your childhood experience in terms of how you were parented and the culture around that versus now and what you're looking at in parenthood?
That's been the most vulnerable, most eye-opening part about all of this. And that's just happened recently, I think probably in the last 4 or 5 years. And I think, you know, growing up, it was very much so we, you know, discipline was a big part and we were very much like, you know, structured in the way that we were raised. And it was very much like, you know, respecting your parents and your, you know, as soon as you walk into a room, you've got to say hi to everybody. You know, that's something that I remember that was a very, very big part of the way that I grew up. And it was very much about we didn't talk a lot about the way that we felt, or we didn't talk a lot about the what we were experiencing, right? There wasn't a lot of that. If we did something wrong, well, we were punished for it. And there wasn't a lot of, there was rupture there, right? We were disciplined. And I remember, you know, my stepdad was pretty hard on me. And, you know, I think it was seen as like, well, I didn't know my bio dad growing up. And then all of a sudden, well, my stepdad, you know, now, and he was loving towards me, right? It wasn't anything like that, but it was very much like, okay, well, you need a father figure in the picture. And well, then that role is just strictly to be, hey, you know, very punitive at times and very much like, this is what you're supposed to do. And I'm going to hold you to it. And there's not, that relationship was just really centered around that. So then when we first had JoJo, I think all those things and all those insecurities for me that I had growing up and now like, okay, well, this is the way, you know, that a father is supposed to be, and this is what I'm supposed to do. Well, then, you know, that was all based, a lot of it was fear-based for me, right? Like I was worried about either disappointing, you know, my stepdad or my mom, or I was worried about, you know, getting in trouble, or I was worried about a lot of that stuff. And so I think when we had JoJo, our first one, it was like, well, that's the way that I parented, right? And that's what I expected it. And if it didn't go that way, well, then I felt like, well, something's wrong, or, you know, so that, and that was early on. And I can remember that stuff coming out for me, right? If we were out somewhere and he would start crying, or if he was trying to go to sleep and then, you know, Erica would go get him up, I would feel like, well, we were doing him a disservice, or we're, you know, quote unquote, spoiling him. Like all those things kind of came up, right? And it was just, I didn't do a lot of work around trying to shift that mindset or trying to change that mindset and really trying to explore, like, again, what's going on with him and what are his needs. But and as he got older, I think what would start to happen is and Eric and I talked a lot about this, is it was her trying to kind of change, like, yeah, we were parented this way, but it doesn't mean that, like, okay, well, we need to work around that and see exactly why we feel the way that we feel when XYZ happens. So we started to do work around it, but I still had some of those biases that I had growing up, and it was tough to change that. I mean, that takes a lot of work. And so I had to, like, again, I'll give you a perfect example. You know, something would happen where JoJo would do something wrong, or Ellie would do something wrong, and they would throw something, or they would get upset and they would slam the door or be quote unquote disrespectful, right? So then I would try to go correct it, and it was legalistic in a way, right? So I tried to go correct it. Erica was like, look, either just take a step back or wait or give them some space, or talk to them about, like, okay, talk to me about why you responded this way. Like, what are you feeling? What are you thinking? What's going on? Talk to me. I didn't do a lot of that right away. So then what would start to happen is when Eric and I would try to talk about it, then we weren't in agreement at all times. So then it was like, okay, well, that's a tough thing, right? So then we would internalize a lot of those feelings between Eric and I. So then what we would try to do is saying, okay, well, you know, the life would take over again. We just keep going. And it would happen again. And then I would feel like, okay, well, I'm going to respond to JoJo or Ellie or Lisi, whatever, right? Like the same way. But really what the way that I was responding to was not in that moment trying to figure out what's going on with our kiddos, but really because I was feeling inadequate or insecure about the way that Eric and I were communicating about addressing the behavior or whatever, right? Like all of that. So, and I hope that's making sense right there. But again, like, you know, you can see the layers start to form pretty quick between what I experienced 10, 15 years ago when I was a kiddo, or longer than that, right? 20, 25 years ago, or what I experienced last week between something that happened between Eric and I, right? So all of that started to just kind of happen. And as you know, and again, I mean, you know Erica very well, and obviously she works, you know, for you all, and just, I mean, it's a life's work, and what y'all do is amazing. And anyway, I bring that up to just say, like, she was patient with me, and she, I don't know, just showed me the power of that respectful parenting piece. And it's not about perfection, it's about intention. And I started to just pick up on some of the things that the way that she parented, or we finally got to a point where we felt like, okay, we need to sit down and communicate about this. And, you know, all those things were different to me because I wasn't parented that way.
It's so frustrating to spend the money and effort to buy your kids clothes just to have them grow out of the size within a week, or have your kids complain that they itch, pinch, or just aren't comfortable. If you're with me on this, you've got to check out Posh Peanut. Their sensitive, skin-friendly clothes are made from viscose from bamboo, stretch with your kid as they grow, and they're also made to last. Posh Peanut makes thoughtfully crafted, super cute clothing for kids and families. It is the softest thing, y'all. The design is all done in-house with different patterns, and it came in the mail, and I was like, oh my gosh, I want to wear this for myself every day. Their luxe women's pajamas and robes were all that I wanted to wear postpartum for nursing and hanging out on the couch with Mila. It helps so much that the fabric is breathable and chemical-free, which means they're delicate against Mila's sensitive skin too. And I totally get why Posh Peanut is loved by over 1 million parents. Right now, Posh Peanut is offering our listeners 20% off your first order with promo code VILLAGE. Go to poshpeanut.com/VILLAGE and use promo code VILLAGE for 20% off your first order. That's poshpeanut.com/VILLAGE, promo code VILLAGE. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Being back to work after maternity leave has been so good and, frankly, so hard. I love what I do, and I missed collaborating with my team while I was out, and it's been a tough transition. The combination of a packed schedule and still being the milk machine for Mila Bean, it's hard to juggle everything. I feel so grateful for my weekly therapy hour. Sometimes I'm just holding so much and I need a safe space to let it out and get it off my chest. I've noticed that when I don't release it, it comes out anyway, but usually in ways that aren't aligned with how I want to show up in the world. BetterHelp is such a convenient, flexible option for parents who just can't take the travel time to get to an in-person therapy visit. It's entirely online. You can show up in your jammies, always a win in my book, and you can switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you're on your way to feeling heard. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/voices today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp, HELP.com/voices.
So I didn't have a toolbox. I didn't know what to do. I was fearful. I felt insecure about parenting that way. Sometimes I felt like it was inadequate. I felt that I was inadequate and I wasn't prepared. So then I tried to overcompensate and all that stuff came up. And I know I'm kind of just word vomiting here, but I'm just saying that to say, like, well, now as I listened to her and we talked about it and I started to parent that way, or I started to not be legalistic in the way that I addressed it, like not think that my kiddos are doing something bad. Like that was a big thing for me, right? Like it was, my kids are not bad, right? They have a need. They have a need for connection. Something's going on. They're hungry. They're tired. X, Y, Z, all of that. As I started to open up my mind to start thinking about that, I saw our communication change and I saw the trust that they had in me to actually be able to just address it or listen to them or not get upset or not, you know, again, not have that mindset of something's wrong, they're doing something bad, I need to address it, I need to go in there and again be punitive about it, punish them for it, give them a consequence, XYZ. Like that was a game changer. And it's a work in progress. It always is. I'm not perfect by any means, but those are big things that just started to change the landscape for us. And one thing, something as simple, I've tried this as much as I can, is something happens and, you know, I give you another example. Like one thing that used to be big was Ellie and JoJo, they're pretty close in age, they're only 21 months apart. And they would play on the trampoline together, or play on the playscape together. Well, Ellie would start crying and I would assume that JoJo hurt her because that's what she would say. So that was a trigger for me. Like, hey, you hurt your sister. And it would cause issues for me because my response, right? Let me rephrase that. My reaction, it wasn't a response, it was a reaction. I would not be happy about that. And so I could see JoJo start to, if that would happen, and he whether he did it by accident or whether he did it because who knows, he would be worried about my reaction. And I could see that. And one thing that I started to change was I would close my eyes. I would take a breath. I would take a pause, probably last about 2 to 3 seconds. And I would go to Ellie and I would give her a hug and I would extend my other arm to bring JoJo in because I could tell that he was worried about hurting her. And again, like having that mindset of he's not doing something bad. My kids are not bad. He's not trying to hurt his sister, right? And either it was a fleeting moment from 1 second to the next, she was fine, all of a sudden, miracle, and we're back to playing again and it's all good. Or we would talk about it and inevitably it was somebody did something to somebody else or somebody was upset about X, you know, not having a turn on this or not being able to, you know, they felt that they weren't listened to by the other sibling, whatever. We would get down to the bottom of that, talk about it, and then all was good. But it wouldn't lead to me having a reaction of where I would became upset. And then all of a sudden, I think that would make it a lot more about my reaction as opposed to let's try to figure out what's going on here so that I can help you to build your toolbox. So that's my job, build your toolbox about how you can respond differently the next time. Right. And so anyway, yeah, that's my long-winded answer right there.
Yeah, no, I love it. There's so much in there that I think is cool. No, so much that's like so many good nuggets in there. And one thing that I think is huge is that acknowledgement of like, yeah, I was raised this way. And so like, that is of course what I'm coming to the table with, right? Like right out the gates, we are like, yep, we repeat whatever we experienced, right? It's like telling kids to like, do what I say and not what I do. They're not going to, they're going to do what's modeled for them. And it's the same with us. We were kids and we're going to do what was modeled for us. And so I think it's huge to acknowledge. And also it makes sense to me to have fear around, I think especially in raising boys, if you came from like that, the culture of like punitive and punishment and respect, that like we want you to show up a certain way, in a fear, I think, of like, if you don't, if you show up as quote soft or whatever, like what's that going to mean for you socially? What's that going to mean for you down the road? What if you're crying at school? Are people going to make fun of you? I think so much of it can come from a place of fear and wanting our kids to be able to thrive socially. And if what we knew was that there were narratives attached to emotional intelligence that were feminine, then raising boys, it can feel like, no, you're not supposed to be able to do this. And I think sometimes it can be easier to let like little girls cry or feel because it's viewed as a feminine thing in our culture versus letting a boy do that. And I was just wondering if like you noticed any of that for you and your parenting, like, was there a separation between, I know it also just time in like getting to experience parenting with JoJo and then getting to Ellie down the road and then Lisi, but did you have, or do you experience a difference in expectations from JoJo, you think from a gender perspective versus the girls?
I think initially I did. I think initially, you know, like you said, time played a part in it, right? Him being our first one. So that was, you know, that's just his experience, right? And we've gotten, I think our perspective has changed as we've now, you know, getting into our third one. I'm hoping we're veterans, right? But anyway, I think the gender part, there were elements of that, but I think one of my biggest growth pieces too on that was I always thought that when I heard respective parenting or I heard anything like that, it meant permissive, right? It meant like you're going to allow things to happen or you're not going to hold a boundary or you're not going to, you know, it just means that you're going to exactly right. You're going to be soft on it or you're going to, or your kiddo's not going to learn manners or not learn respect. And quite the opposite, you know, actually like it just, and as soon as I realized that, I think it was like, well, and you know, and Eric and I would talk about it like, well, no, we're not saying that, you know, this is going to happen or that's going to happen, or you're going to be able to have popsicles before bed, or you're going to be able to have a bunch of snacks, you know, because, you know, even though we talk to you about dinner or whatever, it doesn't mean that at all, but you know, we're going to love you through it. And there's not going to be anything else except, you know, giving you a hug. And I know you're upset about not having a snack. I hear that. It would be great to have a snack. and that's about where it stays. It doesn't mean that you go get it, right? Like, I think that changed a lot for me. With JoJo, I mean, being a boy, you know, I think there definitely was elements of that early on, but I think, and this might just be completely coincidental, but as there were elements about exactly right, not spoiling him, some of the toughness part of it, like, you know, not wanting to go cry to mom, not wanting to, all of that, right? Like, you know, I think coincidentally, then my parenting started to change right as Ellie was getting just to that age of being a toddler. And then obviously now with Lisi, it's evolved and it's going to continue to evolve. But one thing I noticed that JoJo crying, and he'll tell me now, you know, and again, I'm not perfect at it, you know, and Eric and I would talk a lot about it. Yeah, there's times where I'm like, bud, why are you crying about that? Why is that making you cry? Like, you know, and that'll come out, right?
Yeah.
And he'll tell me now, because we've told him enough about that respectful piece. Like, look, bud, if you're gonna cry about it, if you're gonna be frustrated and stomp your feet, if you're gonna be frustrated and just kind of walk away, need space, if crying's for you, whatever it is, however you need to express that, express it. So he'll tell me now, no, I'm allowed to cry about it. If I need to cry about it, I need a good little cry, then I'm going to cry about it, and then I'm going to move on, and I'm going to be okay with it. And once I saw that, and the fear part about, well, a boy crying somewhere, or if he's going to be out at school crying because this happened, or he's going to be out at basketball practice and crying because this happened, once that left and I wasn't feeling that way, or that fear wasn't there for me, I just saw him in a completely different light, as far as like, yeah, it's okay for you to cry, but absolutely. But he actually, you know, and obviously, you know, if we're somewhere and I see something happening, or I see, you know, some things come out like from other kiddos and stuff, and I just kind of notice the way that he responds in certain situations, he's pretty resilient, you know, and that toughness piece is there, but that toughness piece is there from him. I mean, he's one of the most empathetic kiddos I know. I was in education for 11 years, right? Like, so, you know, I take that as context, but I mean, the way he responds in some of those situations, he actually doesn't, you know, cry, and he's able to kind of like figure out and navigate those emotions pretty quickly and effectively and navigate through these situations that, if I didn't change my mindset, I probably would have wanted him to not show any of that emotion, thinking, fearful that in these situations that I think are going to come up, well, all he's going to do is just cry and not have any control over it. Quite the opposite, because we let him kind of express it this way and work with him on some of those things, he's actually able to navigate it sometimes a lot better than some of his peers, or, you know, just situations that I noticed, right? Like, and that's, I don't know. It's profound, right? And just seeing that at work and seeing the value in that and the way that he is. And I think it trickles down a little bit to the girls and seeing him like in as a big brother and navigating some of those things, he's able to kind of coach them up a little bit sometimes. And it's a beautiful thing to see, you know, it really, really is. And again, another example, you know, I think this was last week. You know, Eric and I are home, it's late night. And so Lisi's chasing him around and we're asking him like to just have a seat and just hang out for just a second. We were working on something else, I can't remember what it was. And so of course we're distracted. We're probably frustrated about what it is that we're trying to work on and we can't finish it. So then it's like, you know, it's noisy and it's almost bedtime. And yeah, I think every parent that's listening to this knows that landscape pretty well. So it's like asking him to have a seat. His little sister's chasing him around and he doesn't have a seat. And he's kind of running around, but starting to walk a little bit more, maybe trying to see if his little sister will stop trying to play and chase. And all of a sudden, well, she falls as she's trying to chase him and she slips and hits her head and she starts wailing. So then Eric and I do not respond well, that's the way we should. And we're mad at him for saying, well, why didn't you listen when we told you to go sit down? Now look at what happened. And so we go through that whole process. It's not, you know, he starts crying. He's not happy that we're not happy with him. And so we get some space. And then that's the rupture piece. And then we go repair and we're like, hey, bud, that was not your fault that she fell. It's not about you sitting down. You know, we're sorry we got upset. Like, we get it. You're trying to either play or she keeps chasing you. So you're like not trying to figure out how to respond. It's almost bedtime. She doesn't have the best balance right now. You didn't really need to necessarily sit down. It was just us trying to concentrate on something else. And that's not on you. So we're sorry about that. And he said, it's all right. I love you no matter what. And well, that right there, right? Like, and I've heard the girls say that too. And that comes back to, like, you know, again, something that I would have never said probably 4 or 5 years ago was, it's okay. You're not in trouble. I'm not mad at you. Mm-hmm. Right. Like, something like that has changed the way I've addressed any, sometimes those situations when sometimes as a parent, you pretty much think like, no, you might get in trouble and I might be mad at you. Like, I'm
and
not
I am mad at you.
Yeah. Like, but I'm a salesperson right now. I'm going to try to sell that. I'm trying to sell it to myself as much as I'm trying to sell it to my kids. And don't get me wrong. There's been times when it's like, no, like, there is a consequence and I am mad and I got to figure out how I'm going to navigate this. But yeah, like, those are just kind of some game changers, but definitely the gender thing, like, that just seeing JoJo respond in some of those situations as a boy. And then I think the girls, like, it just, I don't know. I think, like I said, coincidentally, I think by the time that Ellie was getting into that toddler phase and she, so, you know, that opened up that whole world for her and what that meant for the relationship that her and I had. And then, you know, that she had with Erica, like, I think it was just coincidental to where there really wasn't a way that we addressed Ellie or JoJo or Lisa. It was just, we're trying to be appropriate in identifying, not necessarily boy or girl, but we know the kind of kiddo that JoJo is, and we know how he best responds in situations. And that's not necessarily the best way that Lisa responds or Ellie responds.
Are you overwhelmed by the things that get in the way of you doing what you want to do? Are you looking for ways to simplify life to better align with your values? Do you want to create space in your schedule so you have room for more of the good stuff? Play, joy, relationships, gratitude, and more? If you answered yes to any of these questions, I invite you to check out Edit Your Life, a podcast to help you edit the unnecessary from your life so you have more room to enjoy the awesome. Through episodes with me, Christine Coe, and a range of super smart, compassionate, and thoughtful guests, you'll come away with big picture insights and practical ways to declutter your home, schedule, and mental space without getting bogged down by perfection. I have always believed that small moments and actions matter tremendously. My goal is to help you find agency and space in your life through doable baby steps that will leave you feeling accomplished instead of overwhelmed. Check out Edit Your Life wherever you enjoy your podcasts.
Oh, hey, everybody. It's us, Blair and Molly, your old pals from Toddler Purgatory. Two moms who are also actors, who are also creative beings, who sometimes feel stuck. And now we're back with a whole new podcast about unsticking it, launching in January. What happens when life gets in the way of our creativity instead of nourishing it? We talk to all sorts of guests about how to break through the mucky, gluey, sticky wall that can get between you and your creativity. We hear about their journeys, their successes, their challenges, and even their bougie coffee shop orders. So join us, won't you, as we deep dive into how to unstick ourselves from the life gunk that can get in the way of our creative freedom. Get out of there, life gunk. Let us help you get back to your best creative self. Look for Unsticking It with Blair and Molly wherever you listen to podcasts, starting in January. Unsticking It with Blair and Molly, because sometimes life sucks. Unsticking
it. But one thing that was tough for Eric and I was definitely JoJo being our first, and me, again, like, both her and I coming into with all these biases that we had, right, and experiences that we had in the way that we were parented. Well, early on, it was either Erica over trying to compensate because I would address JoJo a certain way, or me trying to overcompensate in this way. So, like, we had to kind of work through that in the way that, hey, are we addressing our kiddos because of the insecurities that you and I have with each other becoming parents and trying to navigate all of this? Or is it specifically to what is going on with our kiddos, right? Like, all of that came into play. And there's a lot to unpack there, and we had to work on it. We had to unpack it. And I think that's one of the toughest things, because there is a level of saying, like, you've got to be committed to this, right? Like, making the decision, being committed to it, and then seeing the success on the other side of it. And that's big time.
Yeah.
But once we were there and we're in that headspace, it was completely different. And we saw it in our kiddos, and it was, you saw, like, and again, they're resilient. They're more resilient than we are sometimes. And that, you know, all of that, I guess, just, yeah, it opened up my eyes completely.
What was the turning point for you that led you to be like, ah, I want to take a look at what I'm bringing from childhood and maybe do some things differently? Like, was there a moment, was there a thing, or what, kind of what came up for you that you were like, I'm ready to dive into this other thing that and understand it?
Sure. I think there was definitely moments where I realized that if I didn't approach this differently, the impact that it's having on my relationship with Erica and my relationship with my kiddos and how I just approached everything. I mean, professionally too, if I didn't make a change in just my mindset and understanding exactly what's going on here and why is it that I respond this way, and it's not just a natural thing, and it's not just something that I can just continue to do. I think it was just, I don't know if it was one day to the next or just how it was, but I just realized that I needed to make a change, because I could see the impact that it was having on my kiddos, and I could see that it was, I needed to change my behavior. I needed to change my responses. I needed to add something that was going to be beneficial to me and my kiddos and my wife. And I don't know, I don't know if that explains it so much, right? But I realized that it was my behavior and the way that I addressed it. And again, I think Erica is definitely my better half, probably better three quarters at most times. But, you know, she told me, she's, you know, we talked about it, and I remember this conversation, like, and you know how it is. I mean, as parents and as, you know, partners and stuff, is just like, you remember these deep conversations and profound conversations that change the landscape. You know, we were talking about it and all of this. And she said, you know, think about what I did at work and what I'm doing for kiddos and the emotional intelligence that I have for the adults and the children in the community that I work for, and the conversations that I have with them about all of that, like not reacting, responding. How I have conversations with, like, look, I want, you know, you're feeling a certain way because this is what's coming out for you. It's not that you're angry, it's that you're hurt, is that you're sad, it's that you're insecure, it's that you're feeling left out, it's that you're not angry about it. That's how it's going to come out, but that's secondary, right? I was able to do all of that for work. When I was a coach, the same way, right? Like that would be the way we would talk to our athletes. That would be all of that stuff. And it changed the relationships that I had with all of the kiddos that I interacted with, the families that I interacted with, the teachers at work, and all of that. But yet that wasn't the capacity sometimes that I, or a lot of times that I wouldn't have at home.
It's so much harder to do for ourselves.
Sure. And so, you know, and Eric and I think talking about that, just said, look, I can do both. And I love what I do professionally because of the impact that it has on those relationships. And that's what it's all about. Well, I want the same for my family. Mm-hmm. I want the same thing at home. And I think that just changed it for me, everything that I learned, and it's not to say that it was all just scrapped away, right? But there's all those experiences that I had, I could channel that into now going, you know, working on this and make that impact on my kiddos and parent this way and have that interaction with them. And And once I let go of the perfection piece, right, just kind of what we talked about at the beginning, once I let go of that, the piece that that brought was just like, okay, I don't need to be perfect at this. I don't need my kiddo can have a meltdown and it's perfectly fine. We can be somewhere and my kiddo not respond appropriately or be upset about something that we didn't go back and get the water bottle and we're at, you know, somewhere and they're upset about it. Like, it's okay. Like, it doesn't need to be, doesn't mean that I'm a bad parent. Doesn't mean that my kiddo's bad. All of that. Once I let go of all that, it just, I think it all started to come together. And again, I mean, it's a journey. It's a marathon. It's not a sprint for sure. But man, it feels nice to be in this spot now and approaching it this way. And it's so much nicer to be able to soak in these moments where, because I'm not so focused on all the other stuff.
Yeah. Oh, it's so much nicer. I mean, you're parenting from a place of connection now, and that feels better for all of us.
Yeah.
Just as the final question for you, when you are consuming information about this or just in the world of parenting and in respectful parenting, what message do you feel like is lacking in that world that maybe you needed before, or maybe that you still need now? I guess what part of the real life experience isn't represented in the
snapshots? I think it might be the longevity behind this kind of approach in the fact that when our kiddos are going to be 25, 35, 45, a lot longer than they're going to be 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, right? Doesn't mean never means that, hey, like their kiddos are going to have those experiences. They need these experiences, right? And go ahead and be a kiddo. You don't need to be an adult yet. But these skills that they're learning now and that emotional intelligence piece and being good with people and being good people and that connection piece and understanding people's responses and being kind with all that, I think understanding the longevity behind that, and that a lot of times when they get out into quote unquote the real world and they you know go out and start doing what it is that they're going to be doing and having that career and having those relationships when they get older, because it's all about interpersonal relationships no matter where you go, that these skills and this emotional intelligence part of it is exactly what is always going to that's what is going to be there with them, right? Like until their soul, right? Like it just, those are the skills I think that they need and is going to help them be successful. And that is how success can be measured. But, you know, it's hard sometimes because I think there's a lot of pressure there. There's a lot of pressure to be a certain way or not be vulnerable or not be soft. But some of the toughest people I know are some of the most kind people that I know. And that, I think sometimes that's lacking. I think sometimes there needs to be more comfort around that. I think there needs to be more just a willingness to say that's what's effective, being able to be good with people and good people. And, you know, the skill set and the technical part of whatever it is that you want to do for, you know, that you're going to enjoy and be passionate about, all of that, you know, that'll come. But that part of the brain development piece is so crucial. And it, you know, people are not going to remember exactly like what you taught them, but they're going to remember how you made them feel. Right. And that's, all of that, I think is sometimes can get lost in a lot of this. But yeah.
Oh, I think that's so true, and I agree. We're not raising, we're raising future adults, and I don't need them to act like an adult tomorrow. I think recognizing that, yeah, these skills they're a part of living what I would consider a successful life, where we feel connected to each other, we can regulate, we can communicate. And that for me, like, you know, when I started doing Tiny Humans, Big Emotions as a live workshop, I started off and I used to ask folks, like, what do you want for your kids when they are grown? Like, what do you want for them? And over and over and over, number one was always happiness. Like, I want them to be happy. And I was like, man, I got some bad news. Like, yeah, the key, sure. They're never going to live with just happiness, right? Like, they're going to experience a whole range of emotions. And the key to, I think, living the happiest, most content or calm life is knowing what to do with all the other crap, like knowing what to do with the hard stuff. And I think that it's so much bigger than the 8-year-old in front of you. For me, it's like, what skill sets do I want them to have as adults in relationship with others at work, whatever it is. But yeah, no, thank you. I agree. Thank you for hanging out and getting vulnerable.
Absolutely. Thank you.
I appreciate it.
Been great. Absolutely.
It's a true joy and privilege to get to be in your village.
It is. It is. Yes. Thank you. Thank you for being part of it. We love you very, very much. And you're awesome. Y'all are amazing.
Thanks.
Thanks for tuning in to Voices of Your Village. Check out the transcript at voicesofyourvillage.com. Did you know that we have a special community over on Instagram hanging out every day with more free content? Come join us at seed.and.sow, S-E-W. Take a screenshot of you tuning in, share it on the gram, and tag seed.and.sow to let me know your key takeaway. If you're digging this podcast, make sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. We love collaborating with you to raise emotionally intelligent humans.
If you're a parent, I invite you to join us at the Mindful Mama podcast, where it's all about becoming a less irritable, more joyful parent. With sometimes hilarious and always thought-provoking experts and friends, at Mindful Mama, we know that you cannot give what you do not have. And when you have calm and peace within, then you can give it to your children. I'm Hunter Clark Fields, and I can't wait to see you there. Listen in to the Mindful Mama podcast.